I'm Sean Haney, and this is Real Ag on the Weekend. Let's get real and get connected with the week that was in Canadian agriculture. Real Ag on the Weekend starts now. Welcome to Real Ag on the Weekend. I'm your host, Sean Haney of RealAgriculture.com. Hope you had yourselves a great week. We got a great show for you here today. We're going to hear from Chuck Penner of Left Field Commodity Research. We're going to dive in on what's the latest on what's happening in the pulse markets, field peas, lentils, chickpeas. Of course, Canada's got some real adversity in terms of some of those trade relationships with China. There's tariffs there on peas. Also, India in the last couple of weeks applied a 30% tariff on the Canadian peas into the country there as well. So we'll get Chuck's thoughts on what's going on in the pulse markets. We've also got a conversation with Michael Harvey. He is with CAFTA. That's the organization that represents all the exportable commodities in Canada. They are fresh off a trip to Washington, D.C. to talk about the benefits of free trade and how Canada is a real complement to the U.S. economy at a time where affordability is a major concern for Americans. And we'll also finish up today with Jay Wetter. He is the editor of Canola Digest. We've got Canola Week coming up in Saskatoon here in next week. And Jay's going to tell us all about it. There's three great days all dedicated to the crop of canola. And Jay is like, as the editor of Canola Digest, I don't think anyone thinks about canola more than Jay Wetter on a daily basis. If you have any feedback on today's show, you can send me an email, shaney@realagriculture.com. You can also call the Real Ag feedback line, 855-776-6147. Let's get to my conversation with Chuck Penner of Left Field Commodity Research. Chuck, recent conversations lately, I've kind of come to the conclusion that canola's taken up a lot of the oxygen. You watch the mainstream news, we hear about tariffs, and it's always in reference to canola. Now, canola's an important crop. There's like 20 million acres of it. But there's also pulses, and peas specifically kind of feel like a bit of a, they're getting the double barrel right now. We got Indian tariffs, we got Chinese tariffs. What is going on right now in the overall pulse market? Because I'm hearing a lot of concern from growers in terms of what this looks like, not only in the 25 crop, but looking ahead to how much pulse should I actually plant in 26?
Yeah. You know, it's kind of a bit of a situation. I had actually expected it to be even worse. When this news started rolling out, okay, I expected the reaction to be even worse. The fact that, pulse prices were coming down. We knew they were coming down because we were expecting big crops and not just in Canada, but elsewhere too. So pulse prices were already coming down in the summer. And then there's a post-harvest recovery, price recovery. And that's not been happening, but it hasn't, they haven't dropped further. Like that was my fear, is that, they could move contra seasonally and move lower. But even yellow pea bids, green pea bids, even maples, although it's a little harder to find a bid on greens and on maple peas. But these tariffs are certainly putting headwinds in the face of these crops. Even though prices are steady, you could contrast that to say, well, what if those tariffs hadn't been in place?
Right.
Then we would be seeing more strength, right? If China and India were both buying yellow peas, we would be seeing stronger prices. We still have huge supplies in Canada, no question, but we would be seeing some stronger prices. So it's more the what if. Here's a possibility of what it could be, and we're still kind of, here in reality at these lower prices. But it's certainly not the case. Looking at Chinese trade data, Indian trade data, well, they're going more toward Russian peas. The Indian tariffs are on everybody. It's certainly putting a bit of a tough face on it. The one thing that is happening though, in for peas and for lentils, I would say, is that it's the classic market response. You drop prices and you raise demand. So even though we're not shipping much to China, and we'll start dropping off to India, we have been moving some decent volumes of yellow peas and red lentils, and from what I'm hearing, green lentils as well too. Some pretty good volumes already, close to average levels, okay, in and around that. So, I think what's happening is we're picking up more business from some of these other countries like Pakistan, Bangladesh, some of those types of countries that normally wouldn't be buying, or they haven't been buying when prices in the last few years were high. Now they're returning to the market. So it's helping cushion that. But again, it's like, what if? What if you had had China and India buying full tilt? Where could prices be? So like that's where we're at, kind of at right now.
Well, and with both China and India, a part of the what allows them to apply the tariff is they might not need as much inventory as they would if the tariffs weren't there, right? So it affords them the ability to do so. Is that seems to be the way it is in canola. Is that the case when we look at pulses?
Well, China is one, like India applied tariffs across the board to everybody. But we're seeing already that their planting of the pulse crops this winter, which are peas and lentils and chickpeas, the acreage looks like it's down. So, they might need to reconsider that at some point. But it's all in response to prices. So when India applied tariffs, their domestic price rose, and that's why our price didn't drop as far. So it kind of offset that to some degree. In the case of China, it's different because they can import Russian peas. Russia grew like well over 5 million tons this year, so they don't have a problem displacing that. But I would say about China and maybe India, they can leave these tariffs on for quite a while, but at some point they're going to come off. Like it's whether it's this year or next year, at some point they're going to come off, and then there will be a strong market reaction. I don't think you want to bet your marketing strategy on, China in April is going to, drop the tariffs or things like that. I'm not saying they won't, not saying they will, but that's a bit of a risky thing. But at some point they will. That's the nature of it. But they can leave them on for extended periods.
You think back 5 years, Chuck, we were hearing so much about, the potential demand increase for pulse crops related to plant protein and, the demand for protein and the role that plant protein would play in the overall protein complex. We sure do not hear or see headlines about that right now. It is really quiet down, my friend.
Well, even when the buzz was the greatest about all of that, if you kind of scaled, or if you kind of like did some of the math behind that, it still wasn't going to offset China or India like completely. It wasn't going to replace that kind of demand. It was still relatively minor, and of course now that it's faded. But I would say is, you don't have the Beyond Meats and the Impossible Burgers and the, those kind of things anymore. But the demand for pulse proteins in other products is still quite strong, actually. So, but no, it was never going to be a million tons of demand, or that it's and so it's just kind of so yeah, it's never believe the market buzz, put it that way.
You've been listening to my conversation with Chuck Penner of Left Field Commodity Research. We're just talking about Beyond Meat. You look at the last 5 years, the stock is down 99.28%. It was over $150 at one time, now trading at $1.02 on the stock market. That's like way to lose a fortune right there. We'll be back with more of Real Ag of the Weekend, my conversation with Chuck Penner of Left Field, right after this.
For balanced nutrition with micronutrients, the best answer is WolfTrax DDP from Koch Agronomic Services. To learn how WolfTrax can ensure nutrient availability through a crop's growth cycle, visit WOLFTRAX.ca.
You're listening to Real Ag on the Weekend, hosted by Sean Haney of RealAgriculture.com on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. You're listening to Real Ag on the Weekend, hosted by Sean Haney of RealAgriculture.com on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. We're talking pulse crops today to lead off today's Real Ag on the Weekend show. Let's continue the conversation with Chuck Penner of Left Field Commodity Research out of Winnipeg, Manitoba. So something else. And I'm going to take an issue in other crops and see if it also applies in pulses with peas and lentils. Right now with canola, soybeans, and corn, there's trade issues for both Canada and the U.S. And so we're hearing we need to have some domestic demand nation building projects to try to deal with some of the supply. So the biofuels, really, whether it's ethanol for corn or it's renewable diesel when it comes to canola and soybeans, depending on which country you're in. Is there an equivalent when it comes to pulse crops, or is it, listen, like this is going to be an export reliant market?
Yeah, you know, nothing to this scale. I mean, the type of scale that you see or we are seeing or have seen in the canola expansions and all of that kind of stuff, the canola crush, not to that extent, certainly. You know, if there are there are lots of small projects, and I guess you can, you know, start adding those up, and you could come up to some tonnage, but no, we're still going to be reliant on the whole situation. I mean, we have been in some ways we have been really lucky in the past, because in 2017, late 2017, that's when India first put tariffs on peas, and so the Indian demand dropped, but that's just when Chinese demand was taking off. And then, you know, when Chinese demand started to fade a little bit, and Russia started entering that market, well, that's about when India, you know, dropped their tariffs to zero. But now we got both of these things happening. And again, they're not going to last forever. But it's like, how long can we wait? These countries have a tendency of, you know, putting these tariffs in place for like 2, 3 years at a time. So I'm not expecting a quick resolution, but it would be great. I mean, you know, our at least, and I don't mean to speak well of the current administration in Canada, but like they're making the right noises anyway with respect to both India and with China. Now, I don't expect a deal with India to you know, cause pulse their pea tariffs to drop, because again, they're global, like they're applying them to all countries. But you know, there is a little more friendliness anyway, less antagonism, put it that way, between these countries. And so that's a real slow grind of a process, but yeah, so sort of hopefully we'll see some signals that way, and or some resolutions that way at some point.
Canadian farmers have really led the charge when it comes to the growth of the pulse industry. Farmers in the northern tier of the United States look across the border and say, we have the same conditions, why not here? Do you see a big potential for growth of pulse acres in the northern part of the United States?
It's a different market down there. In large part, a lot of the pulses there move as a result of food aid, tenders and things like that. So it's less of a free market, if you want to call it, or a free flowing market anyway. So there's some stability there. But you know, I see. And they do export some just through regular channels as well too. But a good chunk of it is this tender business, a food aid business. And you know, who knows what the current administration? I mean, there've already been slowdowns in that or cuts to that, and so it's affected it to some degree. So it'll partly be driven by, you know, whatever the winds from Washington are. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I wonder about that because, you know, with all the attention on China, of course, that's very Midwest driven when it comes to soybeans. You know, don't expect peas to be like number one on the agenda, but that, you know, if the acre got big enough and the lobby voice got loud enough, there, you know, Canada could definitely have some competition long term when it comes to that market.
Certainly so. But there would need to be a change in their market structure to do that. And nothing to say that, you know, the companies down in the US couldn't do that. It's just they haven't to date. But yeah, I think it could too. You're right.
When we look at 26 in front of us, do you see a bit of a turnaround here in terms of how farmers feel about the pulse market? Because anecdotally, I feel like a heavy a cloud, like a weight in terms of how people are looking at this market right now.
Yeah, there is. I mean, there are people who keep pulses in their rotations, just for you know, the
Regardless.
crop. Yeah, regardless. But yeah, you'll probably it'll be one of those dips. We've had them before. I mean, this is a serious headwind, but it'll be one of those dips in acreage, and yeah, and probably rightfully so. That's how the market adjusts, right? It's when you have low prices cure low prices. Well, how? By, like I said before, increasing demand and also reducing production. So it's kind of a necessary step that we need to go through to get, you know, to get the market recovering, you know, quicker. So you know, it would probably be a good thing for the market if farmers did back away from to some degree from pulses in 26.
Yeah, you know, a lot of mainstream radio interviews will ask me, you know, are farmers going to plant canola next year? And I, yes, they are. Yes, they are. Probably a greater probability that there's a greater reduction in the pulse acre than there would be on the canola acre. But you know, I don't know. We'll see how that pencils out when we get a little bit closer to springtime. Ascochyta, or not Ascochyta, Ephinomyces, I should say. Ephinomyces is probably a bigger threat to the pulse acre than some of the marketing things that are happening.
Yeah. Well, it certainly put a ceiling on it, that's for
Yeah.
sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
Yeah.
interesting dynamics. Hey, before we go, you've got some workshops coming up that Left Field Commodity Research is putting on. You're looking at seasonality.
Yeah, we're doing a couple of them. We're doing one in well, end of next week. It's in Elm Creek, Manitoba. That's
Oh,
my old
nice.
stomping grounds.
Nice.
Yeah. So we're going back there. We're going to the golf course, and we're going to put on this workshop. And then we're going to do one in January 16th in Saskatoon, which is the day after the crop production show. So if people are in town for that, then they can just stay for it. But yeah, like it's probably different than. I don't know if it's ever been done before or to this extent anyway. So we've taken all of our price history and all of that kind of stuff and done all kinds of calculations and to see how seasonality is, but also how consistent it is. How like can you actually shape your marketing plan around seasonality? You know, and so looking at, you know, how do prices respond after harvest? When is the high? And it's different for a lot of, each of the crops has its own particular high. A bunch of them are in spring, some of them are in November. Those types of things. And then, you know, can you shape your marketing strategy? And we've done this little thing with a like creating a sample farm and just looking at, you know, if you spread your sales out evenly throughout the year, which I know nobody does, but or if you price them only in the month of that this normal seasonal high happens, how would that work out? And we've done it over the last 9 or 10 years. And for a farm of about 5,000 acres or so, like it averages $100,000 a year higher, just by selling in that month.
Wow.
Now, again, I don't, you know, people can say, well, I can pick the market better than that. Well, fine. But there is something real, to that. And some of the years, there's a couple of years where it didn't work out. But all of the other years it did. So yeah, it's so we've taken all of this stuff and we want to use history as a guide to the future.
If you are interested in that seasonality workshop with Chuck Penner, make sure you go to the Left Field Commodity Research website. We'll be back with more of Real Ag of the Weekend right after this.
Growth, sustainability, and more will be featured at the Sask Crops Forum January 13th and 14th in Saskatoon, including AGMs for Sask Barley, Sask Oilseeds, Saskatchewan Pulse Growers, and Sask Wheat. Register at saskcrops2026.rsvpify.com today.
You're listening to Real Ag on the Weekend, hosted by Sean Haney of RealAgriculture.com on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Canada's been working hard to really diversify trade lanes for a lot of commodities, including agricultural ones, but also trying to shore up this relationship with the United States as Canada's largest agricultural trading partner. Last week in Washington, D.C., 11 of the 12 CAFTA members made their way down to the United States Capitol to talk about trade with a lot of members of Congress from the Republican side of the aisle. Real Agriculture's Lindsay Smith had a chance to catch up with the executive director at CAFTA, Michael Harvey, to talk about the trip and whether or not it was a success.
So very interesting trip. We went, 11 of 12 CAFTA members were there, so almost the whole organization. We were in Washington from Monday to Wednesday meeting with a range of people, some congressmen and senators from both sides of the House, the aisle, as they say there, with some administration members, the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, and American agri-food stakeholders as well.
Now, this is, I'm going to guess, one of the most important meetings you've had in a while of the scope and the scale. It's also about 6 months since you had meetings like this. You did head down to Washington in April. What was the difference between April and now?
So I'd say first, the pace of change in the U.S. political system can be a bit much sometimes to grasp, and it's really important to go down there and feel things on the ground. When we were there in April, it was the period of the Liberation Day tariffs, a lot of talk about Canada-U.S. Trade deficit from the Trump administration. Now it's a different external world where there were these recent elections in some states and cities, and a very different environment. People talking about things that didn't exist in April, Epstein and the ballroom and things like that. The things just changed so fast in Washington.
Now, you also mentioned, meeting with representatives from both sides of the aisle, so Republicans, Democrats. Is there a big difference between who you met with in April and who you met with this past week? Like who was on that list?
Similar groups, but we decided to concentrate more on Republicans this time. I'd say we were more 50-50 the first time, and this time we met more 80% Republicans. And the reason why is that the Republicans obviously have more influence over the administration's decisions. And frankly, the Republicans are more in play in the American system, where they could vote one way or the other, or they could speak up more or less. So it's more strategic to meet with Republicans in general, although it's important to get Democratic perspectives too.
Now, from most people's perspective outside looking in, obviously, for your membership being trade dependent, that is, I mean, it is all about that. We do have the review of CUSMA coming up. Was that, the main focus of all these conversations, or where did some of these conversations go?
So both times we went down with a message that Canada and the US produce food together, and that that's better for Americans. We focus our message on Americans when we're in America, and concentrate on the fact that American producers get high quality, lower cost inputs that make them more competitive abroad, and to produce lower cost food for American consumers. So we concentrate on that message. But given the fact that the USMCA, what we call CUSMA review, is upcoming, we focused our comments in that context. And in that context, what we've been saying is the CUSMA provides the framework that allows American and Canadian producers to make business decisions in the most efficient way, that what people need is stability, and CUSMA provides that framework of stability.
And how did that land? Because we're certainly seeing this week, seeing some of what was submitted for the USMCA review, some of the comments from agri-food and agriculture, sort of, supportive of USMCA, that it works for the American market. So how did that conversation land with some on either side, really?
So the conversation landed very well. What we really see is that, well, first, there was an open letter. As you mentioned, there was support from the U.S. agri-food sector. There was an open letter signed by 124 U.S. agri-food organizations, calling for a 16-year renewal of USMCA with limited changes. That was news, good news. Frankly, when we were down in April, almost nobody from the U.S. private sector was speaking up
Right.
on tariff issues. People were just keeping their head down, worried about how the administration could react if you said anything. We've seen movement on that recently, and this letter from U.S. agri-food sector representatives was a big part of that. We also heard that representatives, including Republican representatives, are also sending letters to the administration expressing support for USMCA and its importance. So there's definitely a vibe shift, to put it in that way.
Yeah. So and certainly it does feel like there are several sort of things happening, and you mentioned sort of off the top, that the sentiment has changed certainly since April. Now obviously USMCA CUSMA is a main focus and for your membership. What about outside of CUSMA though? Are there sticking points that, some of your members are having to grapple with right now?
So the sticking points are not really on our side. What there is a White House and administration that's very focused on some issues that are outside of the agri-food sector. And in Canada, it's been the cases of the cars, the steel, the aluminum. And that's obviously a big part of the conversation. That's before the Supreme Court of the US right now. The agri-food sector is a sector that has not been the focus of what the president's been doing when it comes to Canadian agri-food.
Right.
But you'll have seen that tariffs were put on the agri-food products of other countries, And a big piece of news from last week was when the administration lifted the tariffs on, in a broad sense, products that the United States doesn't produce. So there was a lot of talk about coffee, about citrus, about different things. My read of that is that the president's seeing that affordability for American consumers is something that's a big focus, something that's politically difficult for the administration to manage, and he was responding to that. So while that decision doesn't affect us directly, it definitely shows that the wind is blowing in the direction of being concerned that tariffs cost the American consumer, so they cause an affordability problem.
You've been listening to my conversation with Michael Harvey of CAFTA. You know, on the affordability equation, earlier this week on the Real Ag Radio podcast, I interviewed Deputy Secretary for USDA, Stephen Vaden. And we were talking about some of U.S. farm policy right now. And of course, there's a lot of talk about some sort of ad hoc package that could be announced next week. So the details potentially next week. But affordability, major concern. It is a major concern for farmers as it applies to things like fertilizer prices, but also for just the U.S. taxpayer in general. The rising cost of living, it's a concern in the U.S., just like it is in Canada. And right now, all the messaging is around, here's how we help you address affordability. And that's exactly, it sounds like, the message that CAFTA carried to Washington, D.C., and that continues to be the message that Canada needs to present to the United States, that Canada is a big part of the U.S. tackling that issue. We're back with more of Real Ag on the Weekend right after this.
Invest in your farm's future with Acres for Education. Your donation will give students real-life experiences that will shape their views on agriculture. And every dollar is matched by JGL, doubling your impact. Learn more at aitc.sk.ca/acres4education.
You're listening to Real Ag on the Weekend, hosted by Sean Haney of realagriculture.com on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Next week, I'm going to be in Calgary, Alberta for the Grow Canada Conference, but also in Saskatoon, it is Canola Week. And canola researchers and CCAs all get together to talk about canola really from a research and innovation perspective. I had a chance to catch up with the editor of Canola Digest, Jay Wetter, to talk about this year's event. Yeah, no, for some people that have not been to Canola Week before, what is Canola Week, and mainly who should be attending? Like, you know, for people in our audience are like, well, I've heard about it, or maybe, you know, I need to find out more about this. What's the elevator pitch?
Okay. It brings together researchers and agronomists for presentations on the latest research and innovations, what's going on out in the fields. We have panel discussions about canola profitability this year. We have a bit of a profitability theme. And I'm going to dig into this a little more, but you wanted the elevator pitch to start with.
Okay,
but I think it's a three-day networking opportunity to just talk about what do we need for canola research. What I mean, you've got this innovation series going on right now, so you've got innovation on the brain. But what do we need in the canola world in terms of innovations and maybe stuff's out there that we just haven't adopted yet, or maybe this is totally blue sky thinking. But those are the kinds of conversations that we want to have at Canola Week.
Well, and I think, Jay, canola is a good example of a Canadian innovation. And the purposes of things like Canola Week is not to rest on the crop's laurels.
No,
like, where does this crop go going forward? It's not without challenges. There's disease like verticillium and blackleg and clubroot.
Yeah.
There's obviously marketing issues related to China, for example.
Yeah.
But this is a crop that, let's be honest, has added tremendous prosperity to the farm gate.
Yeah.
If you look at what's happened in the past 10, 20 years.
And it continues to surprise people and frustrate people. Let's be clear. I mean, you talked about flea beetles and how are we still dealing with flea beetles after 25 years of this being a problem? Like how have we not solved that problem? And then cabbage seed pod weevil showing up in eastern Saskatchewan and Manitoba in a big way. Like it was finally at thresholds in Manitoba this year. No, southern Alberta, where you're from. I mean, you've been dealing with cabbage seed pod weevil for 25 years. But anyway, Canola Week started off as Keith Downey's day. That's the first day. And Keith Downey, one of the fathers of canola, still going at 98, Still on the organizing committee.
Of course
still,
he is.
Still, and he's got a great mustache right now.
I would
now.
Expect no difference.
No, and he's sharp as a tack. Like ask him about, sorry, this is rabbit holes.
No, it's
like,
good.
Ask
Go
him
ahead.
About, you know, tell me about what happened in 1959 when you were, like, he knows, it's just, it's amazing.
Oh.
It's amazing. Anyway, so the first day is Keith Downey Day, and it's just basically let's catch up on how the year was. And where are our marketing challenges? What are some of the things that happen with diseases, that kind of thing? Just to catch up on the crop. The middle day is Canola Discovery Forum. That's the Wednesday. And that is traditionally the Canola Council Day, where we just kind of poll the room. What do we need to research? And we're discovering the shortcomings in our research. Mm. And day three is innovation. And it's almost like pushing, and it's really kind of digs deep in certain things. Sometimes it's way over my head. Like it's, you know, genetics work that is like the little tiny, like.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, because I've been to Canola Week and I know, like, yes, like, I've seen those presentations where it's like, I have no idea what they're talking about.
We have an amazing thing on day three this year. We have Allison Sundstrom. You may know Allison.
Yes, I do. Yeah, yeah.
NYA Ventures out of Calgary. She's a venture capitalist. She made some money and she's an agriculture experienced person. Yeah. She's doing a presentation on innovation and venture capital. And then she's moderating this startups pitch session. And this is Wolf Keller put this together. It's going to be a fantastic new thing for Canola Week. Here's one thing I should have mentioned off the top though. The day this airs on your Real Egg Radio is the in-person registration ended earlier in the day, but you can join online. So you can still register online at any time. And I'll give you the link at the end. But if you just look up Canola Week 2025, the event Mobi login will show
up. So if I'm somebody that's listening to this, I'm like, that sounds really interesting. To go to the event, that is closed.
Yeah. Like we may add a few, we may pad our numbers just a little bit, anticipating some interest because you've got a big audience. So we will set aside a few, but for all intents and purposes, registration closed earlier today.
So if I do want to, if I do want to register online, how do I do that over here?
Yeah. So yeah, do a quick search, Canola Week 2025. And you'll get it's a long URL, Sean. I'll send it to you, but it's through Event Mobi. That's the registration body. So if you find Event Mobi Canola Week, you've got the right place.
Okay. And what's the cost to attend?
Online is $200. In person is $475.
Okay. And so if you do participate online, you get the full experience. You just don't get to go drink beer with Jay Rutter after.
Well, this is the thing. Like, and you get the CEU. So there's 14.5.
Oh, good.
Credits if you attend all 3 days. It's like 5, 5, and then 4.5. So if you do one, you can also register for 1 day. But the online $200 for all 3 days, and then you can just come and go as you want. That's the way it goes for online. Yeah. So like these, I was at an event, the Ag Extension event. I can't remember the name of the conference. It was in Guelph in October.
Oh yeah. That was a couple of weeks ago, a month ago.
Yeah. And it was pretty good for a first time around, and I would go again, but I would suggest improvements. But I did a presentation, and one question was, so what do you think about event fatigue? And I said, I don't know whether it's a COVID hangover or just what exactly, but people kind of got away from not attending things in person, and now we're slowly coming back to it. But now we're a little more discretionary. Which ones should I go to? If I'm going to go to 3 events a year, which ones will be the
right
key? So Canola Week appeals to people, like I said, interested in research, interested in innovation. Let's say the two biggest groups who go are researchers and agronomists or CCAs, like anyone involved in extension agronomy. Those are the two big groups. And then we've got the chem companies, we've got the seed companies, we've got extension staff for the provinces, say universities, and then people like me, a few media.
If you meet exactly the criteria that Jay was just talking about, I highly encourage you to check out Canola Week. I have been several times in the past. It is very interesting. It is fascinating and really provides perspective and insight into the future direction of one of Western Canada's most important crops, not only for farmers, but for the industry. So encourage you to check that out. Now, if you have any feedback on today's program, we'd love to hear from you, whether it's from today's show of Real Ag of the Weekend, or if you heard something on Real Agriculture Doc, or from the Real Ag Radio podcast. That would be, we want your perspective. You can send me an email, shaney@realagriculture.com. You can also call or text the Real Ag feedback line. That number is 855-776-6147. Like I said, we had a great conversation with Stephen Vaden, the Deputy Secretary with USDA. Also talked earlier this week to Ed Brzezinski about the canola market from Cargill. So a lot of great stuff at realagriculture.com that I want you to check out. Thank you so much for getting real and getting connected with Real Ag of the Weekend. We'll chat again next week. Cheers, everybody.